It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
And what are we talking about today?
Ben, I think we're going to talk today about spousal rights. We've spoken about this from time to time, but it is an area that deserves a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it begins with the frame up that, you know, Ben, so many folks now unfortunately have lost a spouse to a disease, maybe to natural circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of course, are now in another relationship, and they want to get married, of course, and they have children from prior marriages.
Right.
Now, some of these folks will come in on the front end and get prenuptial agreements, and we do advise that. We can talk about that for a moment. I always tell clients that the prenuptial agreement, which most people think about in terms of a context of divorce,
mm-hmm.
is really not the purpose of a prenuptial agreement in a circumstance like this. The real advantage to a prenuptial in second marriages with children from prior marriages is the way that it gives each party, the husband as well as the wife, the right to independent decisions relative to their estate planning,
mm-hmm.
the right to really appoint anyone as their executor, the right to leave whatever percentage they so elect to their surviving spouse,
mm-hmm.
without the state of North Carolina coming in and dictating what certain rights of the spouse happen to be in that file.
Mm-hmm.
So a prenuptial agreement is advised for folks who are entering into second marriages with children from prior marriages. And again, the primary advantage for those folks is going to be a lot of flexibility in their estate planning documents.
Okay. All right.
Now, with that said, let's move forward just a bit to, you know, these many files that Wes and I see where folks are in their second marriages or third marriage,
mm-hmm.
With children from prior marriages. And they do want to see their spouse provided for, mm-hmm. in some way, their surviving spouse. But eventually they do want the bulk of their assets to pass back to their children from their first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see a lot of these factual scenarios, as one can expect now, in kind of this place where we are, this culture
right.
that we're living in now.
So when we're talking about the scenario where, you know, the husband wants to leave the assets for the benefit of the wife or the wife or the husband,
mm-hmm.
it happens to usually be the husband, you know,
mm-hmm.
that normally
right.
wants to do that because in our society, in most cases, not in every case, but in most cases, maybe the husband was more of the breadwinner, that
mm-hmm.
type thing, so on and so forth. But we're
often is the one that dies first, too.
Well, so. That's right. That's right. Our life expectancy isn't
yeah.
quite as long. Be that as it may, when you have that type situation where one spouse wants to leave the assets for the benefit of the other spouse, but wants to make sure that those assets eventually pass on to their children.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the husband has two children, the wife has two children from a previous marriage, that type thing. You know, obviously we don't want when the husband to pass, you know, when he passes away to leave assets directly to the benefit of the wife because she could remarry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she could be subjected to influence at some point in time. You know, when she's 95 years old, I mean, she could change her will, mm-hmm. even if husband and wife had an agreement that
right.
the will could still be changed, leaving everything maybe just to her side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a common scenario that we deal with, you know, quite often. And, you know, the way you deal with that is that, you know, you set up a trust for the benefit of that spouse. And there's different types of trust that we use, depending on the circumstances. But the trust, basically, any type we use is going to allow that surviving spouse to receive income off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, discretionary principal distributions in the event that she needs them for, you know, health, maintenance, welfare support, whatever she needs to maintain her normal lifestyle.
Right.
So, if there's a failure to plan with regard to that, you know, sometimes really that apple cart gets upset pretty significantly with regard to, you know, the surviving spouse and those assets and maybe the children from the other marriage getting involved and, you know, some of those type things.
So does this lead to, well, obviously there's, you bring up a number of issues where mistakes could be made along the line. I mean, not changing a policy is not changing, not readjusting a will, a failure to make an estate planning. There's lots of things that need to be taken care of early.
Right? We deal with, you know, when we're talking about, you know, a divorce or we're talking about a spouse dying, those kind of things, you know, we really have to, you know, kind of sit down and think about everything that we have. I mean, the thing that you just brought up a second ago that we see pretty often is a failure to change those beneficiary designations, especially with these military related policies, these life insurance policies, survivor benefit type things. You know, we deal with cases all the time where there might even be a separation agreement, that indicates that, you know, the certain policy, Fegley policy or whatever it might be, military policy or other life insurance policies are to go to, you know, whomever for the benefit of the kids, for example. That might be, you know, one of the provisions of the separation, but then that never gets done. So then the person passes away and the spouse is still the beneficiary. Well, where do you think the insurance company or the military insurance, where is it going to pay? Is it going to really care what that separation agreement says?
Yeah.
No, it's going to pay those assets, you know, consistent with the terms of that beneficiary designation. Who was the beneficiary at the date of death? So we've had many of those cases, have several of them going on right now, that have been in court. And, you know, what you have to do, you know, this program today isn't about litigation, but what you have to do in that type of situation is you have to put these insurance companies on notice right away before the funds are paid so that those funds will basically be frozen and maybe they'll be placed with the court in what's called an interpleader so that the court can just hold them and then the insurance companies, you know, has clean hands then and is out of it. They don't want to be in litigation. So that is yet another thing that people need to think about when we're talking about a divorce, a marriage, second marriage, those type things. Don't think that just because you went and maybe did a new will or even like Cecil said, a prenuptial agreement, those type things, that takes care of everything. Think about those, that old military policy that you've had for 30 years. You know, think about that life insurance policy that's paid up. You know, think about those things that you need to go back and make sure are consistent with your wishes as far as those beneficiary designations go.
Absolutely critical. IRA designations, annuities if you happen to have them, life insurance policies. So many assets, as we've discussed, been here on the program so many times, are by beneficiary. And those are not controlled by the last will and testament or the trust that might be involved in a file. Now, of course, when you have a good lawyer working hand in hand with you on this, these are the kinds of things that are going to get flagged by the team, the lawyer team, and they're going to get brought to your attention and they're going to happen. Okay. For instance, with regard to life insurance or even large IRAs, which we see, the beneficiaries can be named the trust. As to an IRA, it has to have certain kinds of, you know, as we, I think you've discussed with Andrew before on the program, that particular trust has to have provisions that allow you to continue to spread out, the payments on the IRA so as to not have to recapture all of the income tax on a deferred IRA. But the stretch option. But the bottom line is that there are absolutely provisions in a trust that can take care of that. And the life insurance or the IRA, can be payable by beneficiary. To the trust. And now we're really cooking. Okay, because now that life insurance policy, those IRA proceeds, whatever, are within the plan, the intention of the husband and the wife.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll have more to come in just a moment. Look, if you would like to ask a question about these estate matters, too, and about second marriages and what kind of legal complications you may run into, you can give us a call right now and call us at these numbers.
800-818-2255 or local 252-247-7282 or 910-353-4674.
And welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station 2. Let's Talk Legal with Harvey Allen Collins and talk about second marriages and the legal problems and the hurdles that you may encounter.
Right. You know, one of the things we've talked about this morning are, you know, prenups and, mm-hmm. you know, talking about doing a prenup before we get married, whether it be the first time, second, third, fourth, whatever. But you know, people sometimes think that, okay, I'm in my 60s, I'm in my 70s, I lost my spouse or... Mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking about getting remarried to this person I've met. And the question comes up about, well, what happens if that person, you know, gets sick? Mm-hmm. What happens if that person gets, you know, develops Alzheimer's or significant dementia to the point they have to go into a care facility? Certainly my assets mm-hmm. aren't considered and don't have to be used to pay for his or her care. Well, that's not the case. The case is that, you know, in the event that the spouse, let's say in a second marriage, does have to go into a care facility, and that spouse has limited assets, and those assets are depleted maybe mm-hmm. at the cost of the nursing home, which is $6,000 or $7,000 a month these days.
Right.
Then we then look to the other spouse's assets as well to determine whether there would be any benefits to cover the cost of the health care, Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
A prenup cannot separate those assets. A prenup cannot make those assets exempt for purposes of qualification for Medicaid. However, if the prospective husband and wife are, don't ever get married.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But one of them gets sick, same scenario, then obviously those assets of the other are not counted. So that's a common question that we get, you know, with regard to that. Basically, Medicaid is going to look at all of the assets of the marital unit
mm-hmm.
when we're talking about eligibility for adult Medicaid services for someone who's become ill and had to go into a skilled nursing facility. But obviously, in the event that there is no marital unit, then it's just the individual's assets
right.
that are looked at.
Okay. But that bifurcation, I mean, you've got to make sure that those are handled so that those assets remain separate, right?
I think what I'm saying here, I know what I'm saying here is there's no way to separate mm-hmm. those assets
yes.
from a Medicaid perspective.
Right. Right.
Other than to not be married. Now,
yes.
I mean, there, as we've talked about before on the program, there's lots of planning techniques that can be done to protect assets.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're just dealing with a single individual, we're only having to be concerned with that certain individual's assets. In the event that there's a marriage, even if there is a prenup,
mm-hmm.
we have to deal with both sets of assets,
right.
all
gotcha.
Of the marital assets.
Gotcha.
So that is a consideration, you know, when we're talking about maybe, you know, we're going to get married or maybe we're not, you know, that's.
Yeah, frankly, there's a lot of older Americans right now that don't get married because of that reason.
Well, there's
yeah.
that reasons
yeah.
and lots of others,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
As you can see, Ben, and we can continue this into next week, this is just a very vibrant,
mm-hmm.
substantive area of the law. The prenuptial agreement is so useful relative to, as I said earlier, relative to giving the clients the flexibility to plan around all of the North Carolina requirements and rights of the surviving spouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, years support, elective share, qualification as administrator, executor, the split of assets. All of these things are dictated by North Carolina statute
mm-hmm.
unless you have, you know, some good estate planning documents.
Right.
If you have a prenuptial, then you're able to more or less do exactly as you please and direct your own ship. If, on the other hand, you don't have a prenuptial, Wes and I are going to have to plan around those spousal rights. We're mm-hmm. going to have documents that will address those in some way.
Hmm. So basically, you know, one of the major issues that we think of when we hear things like what Cecil just said, if there's not a prenup and we have to get into the planning stage with regard to this, is, as we talked about before on the program, the elective share statute. It's a very strong statute protecting the rights of the spouse as it relates to assets. Now, as we've spoken about on the program before, what has it been, 3 or 4 years now since this changed? Yeah. It used to be based on how many children there were, that type thing. Now it's solely based on how long the marriage, the folks have been married, husband,
right.
wife, or the spouses right. have been married. So basically what that is that, you know, you can disinherit your kids if you want to. You can disinherit anybody you want to, but you can't disinherit your spouse
mm-hmm.
unless you have that prenup, and then that allows you to do what you want to do with regard to that. But if you don't have the prenup, then the surviving spouse has a right during a 6-month period of time, a relatively short period of time, to make an elective share,
mm-hmm.
meaning to decide that instead of what you're giving me in the will, or instead of the fact that you're not giving me anything in the will, that I'm going to take my elective share.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the percentages, I have to look them up, but I know when you get to 15 years of marriage, it's half of the total net assets, and that is half of everything. I mean,
right.
that's life insurance, that's non-probate assets and probate assets. Then I think at 5 years or immediately, it's like 15%, something like that. At 5 years, it goes to like 25, and then 10 years, it goes to a third.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the approximate percentages. So basically, that allows a surviving spouse to take what they want from the estate, as opposed to basically being disinherited if there isn't a prenup in
right.
place up to those percentages. So, you know,
but a prenup would trump the spousal
share? What the prenup does is it indicates in most cases that I waive any rights to any death benefits, any benefits derived by statute as a result of the okay. death of my spouse,
right.
those kind of things. So it's a waiver mm-hmm. of those. So you're not forced for that elective share to be in place. Now, if we're in a situation where we have a husband and wife that have been married, and there was a prenup, then we do get into that planning stage. And in many cases, what we do is we'll put in place a trust, like what we talked about at the beginning of this program,
mm-hmm.
a trust for the benefit of the surviving spouse equal to the elective share amount where that surviving spouse receives income off of it but can't take the full principal.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really two birds, one stone here. We're taking care of our spouse,
right?
But we're not disinheriting, in effect, our kids eventually
yes.
by leaving everything directly to the spouse or allowing her or him to take the elective share.
Okay, more to come in a moment here with Harbell and Collins online at harbellandcollins.com. Welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And, of course, the right advice at the right time from Harbell and Collins on Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning.
So where we are right now, Ben, is talking about what is known as an elective share trust.
Mm-hmm.
And basically this is a wonderful mechanism that we can use. We can pull it out of our tool shed, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and apply it to the files where the facts are there. And there are a lot of files mm-hmm. like that, where the spouse absolutely wants to provide for their surviving spouse,
mm-hmm.
but they want eventually, upon the death of their spouse, their second, we're talking about a second or third marriage here,
right.
they want those assets to go back to their children. So the state of North Carolina, in the elective share statute, allows there to be a trust for the benefit of the surviving spouse for their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a disinterested trustee, which is usually not a problem. We can find someone who's disinterested usually in the family. And that means just someone who ultimately is not the beneficiary. And then, of course, these funds, if you will, are suspended for the benefit of the surviving spouse for their lifetime, and then they pass back to the respective children. So it's a very useful plan. The alternative to that, Ben, let's focus on that just in this last minute.
Mm-hmm.
The alternative to that is that the spouse takes the elective share. They do with it as they please for the rest of their life, and they go and get a new will, okay, leaving it to their children, which excludes the children of the first to die. This is a problem, okay?
Yeah.
Let's also keep in mind that although the elective share, many clients will sit in our office, they'll, you know, declare to Wes, they'll declare to me, and they are saying the honest truth that, well, my spouse will never file for the elective share.
Mm-hmm.
That will not happen, okay? Mm-hmm. We have an agreement between the two of us that we will not do that. Well, the problem with that is that as we get older, we many times have to rely on our powers of attorney, our agents in our life. And the agent, of course, will make the election.
Right.
And there can be an argument, a good argument, that the agent has a duty under the power of attorney to make the election.
Fiduciary duty.
A fiduciary duty. And we have several of those files in our office where the agent has, in fact, been required or has filed for the elective share. Well, off goes that very strong portion of the estate. It escalates up to 50%, as we were saying earlier, very quickly. And as a result of that, that 50% goes off to the surviving spouse and then eventually to their children, who are not the children of the source of that 50%. So as we can see, this is a kind of a vibrant area of the law. We are completely up to speed on this, and have to kind of stay up to speed on it, as you can imagine, almost on a weekly, monthly basis, because there are a lot of cases in North Carolina that are always coming out, lots of that continue to kind of address these issues. It's an ever-moving creature.
You know, back to this issue of, well, my spouse won't file for the elective share, but and as Cecil indicated, in many cases, it's not the spouse that does that. It's the attorney in fact under the power of attorney. Well, who's normally the attorney in fact? The children who are eventually going to get the money.
Right.
So,
they're going to file.
I mean, let's face it here. You know, they're going to file it and they probably have a duty to file it. And they're certainly going to benefit themselves by filing it. Another thing that comes up, I know we just have a second left, but another thing that comes up, I mean, let's face the reality here. You know, we deal with spouses all the time who say, I love my spouse, I want to take care of my spouse, but I don't trust her kids. I don't trust his kids.
Right.
They're the ones who are going to get involved and who are going to do what they need to do to make sure that in the name of mom, I'm going to take care of mom, but they're the ones who eventually benefit. So you have to plan for that.
Yeah. And to do that planning, give them a call and make that appointment at 726-9050, 726-9050.